Today we're talking with Dr. Judith Cohen about treating children with PTSD. Dr. Cohen is medical director of the Center for Traumatic Stress in Children and Adolescents at Allegheny General Hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and professor of psychiatry at Drexel University College of Medicine. She's a board-certified child and adolescent psychiatrist. Dr. Cohen, we now know that like adults, children can suffer from PTSD too. Can you talk about what types of experiences cause children to develop PTSD?
Sure, and thank you for inviting me. Well, just like adults, children experience PTSD from child abuse, domestic violence, accidents, disasters, from their parents going to war, and these kinds of things. But it's important to remember that the younger the child, the more the loss of safety in the form of losing their parents or perhaps a sibling or other important person feels like a life threat. So the death of a parent or a sibling can lead to PTSD. Also, being removed from a parent, for example, being placed in foster care, even if the parent was the cause of, you know, the abuse or the trauma, can cause or worsen PTSD in children. So that's important to keep in mind.
How can therapists help children who don't want to talk about their traumatic experiences?
Well, first of all, it's important that the basis of any good therapy with children starts with forming a trusting therapeutic relationship, because a lot of trauma consists of the loss or the violation of trust and the loss of attachment. So it's important that any good therapy starts with a good therapeutic relationship, not only with the child, but also with the parent or caregiver. And then therapy has to be fun and engaging. So you don't necessarily, you know, just sit across from a child and have a conversation. Usually you have to have fun and engaging activities. And that encourages children to engage in the kinds of activities they need to do to heal. And then we use a technique called gradual exposure. We don't do prolonged exposure like what has been shown to be effective in adults, but rather gradual exposure. And this means from the very beginning, the very first time you see children in therapy, you start modeling for them mastery of their trauma reminders and the things that make them think about and remember their traumatic experience, rather than modeling avoidance. So you'll see some therapists who, in an attempt, a real genuine attempt to be empathic, may do things like lower their voice or not refer to the traumatic experience by its name. For example, they won't say sexual abuse. They won't say domestic violence. They may turn away or break eye contact and say that bad thing that happened. And inadvertently, that may model for the child or encourage the child to avoid talking about it. So what we teach therapists to do, rather than doing that, is refer to the trauma by its name, by its proper name, from the very start of therapy, and help children learn and model for children that they can master this, that it's not as scary as they think. And over time, each session, we increase the amount of exposure and mastery that the child has. So by the time it's the point in therapy where they are encouraged to create a narrative about their experiences, the child has already become used to it and gotten used to doing that in each therapy session.
So I assume there is evidence that treatment works for these children.
Yes, there's very strong evidence that trauma-focused therapies are effective for children in overcoming PTSD, and that evidence continues to grow all the time.
And can you talk a little bit about effective treatments, other than what you've already mentioned?
Sure. There are several effective treatments, and I can only mention a couple in the time we have now. So, for example, for very young children, 0 to 6, an effective treatment for PTSD is called child-parent psychotherapy. And that's an attachment-based therapy that focuses on helping parents be the agent of change for the children through their attachment with the children. And that's a longer form of therapy, but it's very effective for young children. Then a school-based group therapy is called Cognitive Behavioral Interventions for Trauma in Schools, or CBITS. And another treatment that works across the developmental spectrum for children as young as 3 through children through age about 18 is trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, or TFCBT. And there are many other forms of effective treatment as well.
Can you talk about medication and its effectiveness?
Basically, there is no real evidence that supports the use of medication compared to these trauma-focused psychotherapies in treatment at this point, but that doesn't mean that medication can't be helpful for individual children, and we certainly need more research to evaluate for which children medication may be helpful in which circumstances. And I should add the children who have PTSD may have other comorbid psychiatric problems. And for those children who have psychiatric conditions such as anxiety or depression, for which there are evidence-based medication treatments, those should certainly be considered.
So in terms of what some common components or elements are needed to effectively treat children, can you talk about that as well?
Yes. Among all of these different treatments, some of which I mentioned, there are a lot of commonalities. And the common components are sometimes described by an acronym that we use, which is the acronym PRACTICE. And this is very convenient because we like children and parents to practice the things that they learn in therapy between sessions so that they master these skills and that this can help them with a lot of the affective and behavioral dysregulation problems that a lot of traumatized children have. So very briefly, PRACTICE stands for these components. So the P stands for psychoeducation. So it's very important for parents and children to understand about the impact of trauma and that they're not alone. They're not the only people who have experienced this. And to understand the symptoms and the problems the child is having through a context of trauma. And for children not to think that they're damaged or for parents not to think of their children as just bad kids. And to share that information with teachers and others who are interacting with the child. The second P in PRACTICE is parenting interventions. We really try hard to include parents or other caregivers in all aspects of treatment because they really are the ones who spend the most time with the kids. So we provide parents with skills so that they can help kids to manage their difficult behaviors and their difficult feelings and thoughts between treatment sessions. And also because parents have a lot of vicarious trauma impact themselves, and many of them have experienced trauma themselves in their own lives. The R in PRACTICE stands for relaxation skills, and we provide a lot of relaxation and individualize this to help reduce the physiologic impact of trauma and to turn down the volume of that for children who have a lot of physical symptoms such as headaches and stomach aches, and also to help them recognize these signals early on so they can, you know, reverse that early. A in PRACTICE stands for affective modulation and identification skills. So we want children to recognize the whole range of different feelings. A lot of children, for example, children who experience early chronic severe repeated trauma, such as child abuse or domestic violence, often learn that it's not safe to express their feelings, so they hold their feelings inside. Or they just push them down so far that they may feel numb and they might not have any feelings. Or other feelings, you know, other kids may just say, all I feel is mad. So they don't have the full range of affective language to express their range of feelings. So we want to help them learn to express a variety of different feelings and that it's okay to talk about different feelings, at least in therapy. And it's very important for therapists to learn about what circumstances children are living in. For example, many children we see are still living in dangerous situations. They may still be living with a domestic violence perpetrator at home or in dangerous communities, and we certainly don't want to encourage children to express feelings that they will be punished for or that will not be safe for them to express in dangerous environments. But we want them to learn that it's okay to express feelings, certainly in therapy, and how to manage and modulate upsetting feelings. So we give them a variety of skills for doing that, for example, seeking social support, or negotiation, or anger management, or the use of humor and optimism and faith and so forth, a variety of different skills, depending on the child, depending on their culture, their family, their circumstances, so that, again, they can turn down the volume of these upsetting feelings and learn to figure out, you know, when they start to feel angry or they start to feel sad, instead of letting it get to an 8 or a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10, starting to recognize those signs of when they're starting to get upset when it's a 2 or 3 or 4, and using these skills so that it doesn't get to an 8 or a 9 or a 10. And then, of course, teaching the parents how to reinforce the child to use these skills and to recognize these signs early on. And the first C in practice stands for cognitive coping skills, recognizing the connection between these upsetting feelings and thoughts the children have or the parents have. For example, a lot of children have maladaptive thoughts, either inaccurate thoughts or unhelpful thoughts, that they're to blame or that they're no good or that other people don't like them. And we try to help them correct or look at things in a more helpful or more accurate way, both about their daily life and later on about their traumatic experiences, so that this is another way of modulating their affect and their upsetting feelings. And after they've worked on these skills and mastered them, and this can take anywhere from 3 or 4 sessions to, with children, for example, who are living in foster care or residential treatment, it may take as much as 12 sessions. We move on to the more trauma-specific components in practice, which are creating a trauma narrative and looking at the cognitions in those traumatic experiences, and then the child creates their own trauma narrative and processes unhelpful or maladaptive cognitions. And in vivo, the eye in practice looks at in vivo mastery of trauma reminders. And then we have conjoint sessions with the child and parent as the child is moving towards the end of treatment, so that the parent and child can move forward towards the end of treatment. And then enhancing safety is the last component, so that children and parents know how to stay safe after treatment is over. So those are some common components that many of these treatments share.
And in terms of seeing a positive outcome, I'm sure it depends on each individual case, but is there a rule of thumb, or is there anything clinicians can learn from what you've talked about how long it'll be before they start to see some change?
Well, most of these treatments really are individualized to the child's and the parent's concern. So, for example, many kids don't come into treatment because of their trauma. They come because of behavior problems. That's the most common reason that kids come to treatment. And so usually you'll develop a treatment plan that is going to focus on these skills that I talked about, so that we are really trying to address these behavioral concerns and the affect and behavioral dysregulation very early. So a treatment like CBITS or TFCBT typically will last between 10 and 20 sessions, and then it will be done. And you should see, parents and kids should see behavioral improvement within 3 or 4 sessions. CPP, child-parent psychotherapy, is a somewhat longer treatment model because it's based on the attachment between the child and parent. But behavioral interventions start pretty early in that treatment, too. So parents should expect to see positive changes quite early with traumatized children, and they should continue throughout the course of treatment.
Is there any new research on the horizon?
Yes, we're constantly trying to do new research. And some of the new focuses in treatment are on prevention. So we're really trying to look at not only how to treat PTSD in children, but how to prevent it from occurring. And some of the exciting research is in trying to identify genetic factors and risk factors for children. Of course, trying to prevent trauma from happening, and developing early treatments, and looking at the impact of these treatments I've described on the brain and the body, and can we actually reverse the negative impact on children? You know, do these treatments not only effectively treat the psychological impact of trauma, but do they also reverse the negative impact on the brain and the body? So there's a lot of exciting research on the horizon, and we're hoping that in future meetings of ADAA, we can present some of those exciting new findings.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. We'll look forward to hearing about the new research in the future. This is Jean Kaplan-Tycho for ADAA.